Welcome to Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World. I'm Richard Dugan, your host. Our program today is going to be focusing on a subject we've talked about before, because we've had our guest on a few times before. His name is Arthur Kanagas, and he is with theworldismycountry.com. And we have a lot to talk about on this particular program with Arthur. Arthur, welcome back. It's really great to have you with us again, because we're still working on trying to come up with some solutions to some of the challenges that we as humanity, not specifically Americans, because we're all here on this planet together. So first of all, thanks for joining us again.
And I just love being on your show because I think Tell Me Your Story really is the essence of it all, because for two reasons. First of all, Tell Me Your Story is a great way to stop any conflict. You know, have people on both sides say, well, tell me your story. That breaks the ice. They can begin to communicate and so on. But also because story is really the crux of what makes us humanity.
Mm-hmm. One of the things that we certainly want to try to break through, if you will, or get past, maybe is another way to put it, is a lot of those things that tend to divide us and polarize us. We're trying to bring people together. This is not about, pitting one side against the other. We're right, you're wrong. We're all just trying to figure this out. And Gary David obviously came up with, I think, a wonderful a solution he came up with, and he was number one with the World Passport. Talk to us about that, just as a little synopsis for those who aren't familiar with the story.
Well, just to back up a moment from the story, why the story is so crucial. It's an incredible story about a fellow who was world citizen number one. And why this story is so important is that when you look at the conflicts in the world today, they're all about stories. They're mostly, you know, one side has their story, the other has their story. And within them, people are actually good. They're trying, they love their fellow person. Some people are so dedicated to their families and to their cause that they're willing to die for it. And on both sides. But the difference is they have a different story. Mm-hmm. And so when we change our story, it really changes the world. Both Joseph Campbell said that in every society, it's the myths and stories that determine the behavior far more than the actual facts. And that, Yuval Harari wrote the book Sapiens, and he says what distinguishes humans from animals is that they can tell stories and they can get together in community. He says everything is a story, like money. You know, money is a story only because you believe in it. These new cryptocurrencies, if you don't believe in it, they don't exist. But if you believe in them, then, and enough people do, then that story has power and it can create things. Well, the nation states are stories. I mean, take a look at this planet. There is no line dividing most of these countries. Some natural rivers and things like that, but most of these are just lines drawn on maps, and people are fighting and killing each other because they have a different story on one side of the line and another. Well, what Gary realized is that since all these lines are artificial, and since every constitution and the Universal Declaration, almost every constitution and the Universal Declaration says it is the right of the people to create government, that we the people created the United States, we the people created this story, and enough people believed it, and it became a reality. Well, we the people, if we created the story of nation states, we can create a better story. We can create a story of world citizenship, which is much more aligned with the reality, because you look at this planet from outer space, there is a planet here. We are all one. We don't have to make it one. Gary would say that. We don't have to make it one world. We just have to open our eyes and see that it is. It already is, folks. When we can become immersed in the story of world citizenship, we can change our world. And, you know, look at Europe. They had this story that all these borders had to be there and all these nations had to be separated. Then they took down those borders. And, you know, since in 70 years since the European Union was created, not a single nation inside the group has had a war with another nation. There have been some civil wars where people we're on different sides of the same issue, but as long as you accepted this governing system with law and so on, a continent had been plagued with war, terrible wars all over. Didn't follow my phone. I hope you can edit
that's
that
all right
out.
That's all right, you just keep right on going.
Just a minute, I'm just gonna turn my phone on silence just a moment.
Sure.
Okay, let me silence the phone here. There we go. Okay. All right. Yeah. Thank you. So let me go back to where I was so you can cut into it. So I was talking about, so Gary Davis realized that if every nation, okay, first of all, let me back up and tell you a little bit of his story. So if stories can change the world, take a look at the story of Gary Davis. I mean, here Gary Davis was a song and dance man on Broadway. He would love to make people laugh. He had his big break when he got to stand in for Danny Kaye, the famous Danny Kaye, because he was an understudy. When Danny got laryngitis, he performed Gary's double talk numbers and all this great stuff. And the audience gave him 13 curtain calls. They couldn't believe this kid could do Danny. And then, boom, World War II comes along. He's drafted, and he chooses the Air Corps, and he finds himself bombing the city of Brandenburg. And when he sees the pictures of the devastation he caused, he's horrified. He says, I'm here on Earth to make people laugh, to entertain them. I'm not here to kill people in their homes and schools and factories. And his own brother was killed. And he knew the pain in his heart. And he's, why am I creating this pain in these other people I don't even know? And he went into a period of reflection. And he finally realized that the key is that inside nations, we already have invented a way to eliminate war. Inside nations with one government, mm-hmm. we don't fight wars. We take things to court. We may have crimes, but if somebody, commits a major crime, like Tim McVeigh when he blew up the federal building, Oklahoma didn't declare war on Michigan for harboring the Michigan militia. You know, it was handled as a criminal justice thing. No matter how bad the crime is, it can be handled as a crime, not as we'll go retaliate against the other people. And some people did this, so we're going to kill and slaughter all these other people because those people did this. It's not even the people who did it. You know, we fight wars like in Afghanistan and other places with people who are just innocent people who are all caught up in this because we have this story that somehow that's going to fight evil. Well, Gary said, okay, so I am going to give up national citizenship and I'm going to declare a government of, by, and for the people. I mean, if we the people create governments, and that's what all the constitutions and the Declaration of Independence say, mm-hmm. then why can't we just create that? And so he was kind of a forerunner who lived an amazing life. He leapt up in the middle of a UN session and said, the nations you represent divide us and lead us to the brink of total war. And he called on them to, you know, hold elections for government of, by, and for the people of the world. Well, as his thinking evolved, he began, and I was working with him on this, he evolved, an interactive plan where we could use the incredible power of the internet to begin to synergize and come together, not with, 51% win and they beat 49%, but rather a synergistic system where we all come reach the, we all get to tell our stories and we get to have a format in these sort of Zoom type interactive meetings, which he called synergistic meetings all over that are people on opposite sides of issues. You'd have, Republicans and Democrats, Israelis and Palestinians, and you get together in these Zoom meetings and you're not saying who's right and who's wrong. There's sort of ground rules with how you interact. You interact in a way that gets people to tell their stories, that gets them to repeat back what they're hearing of the other person, certain communication techniques that many have been developed that have break down these borders. And you develop a way that people can synergistically come to what is it that we really want in this small group. And then you amalgamate that with all these other groups around the planet and you begin to create a whole new way of bringing to the top the true will of the people of the planet. And once we unleash that will of the people of the planet, wow, we will have the power to outlaw wars, to outlaw the ecocide, the destruction of the very life planet that we all depend on. I mean, it's so stupid. They were planning to, we're taking all these steps to destroy this precious, beautiful home we have called planet Earth.
It's amazing how supposedly we're at the top of the food chain. We're supposedly the most intelligent on the planet, and yet we can't even resolve our differences in a peaceful and an amicable way. It's just like we have to resort to this. And I know that there will be those who will sit there and they will say, "Well, all right, they're here. Let me show you this particular species, and they do this, and this species, and they do that, and so on and so forth." It's like, yeah, well, except that they may have territories. I know that, for example, in the cat family, the various cat species and breakdowns, yeah, they have a territory, sure, that they like to take care of. Bears are the same way. Different animals are that way, but they don't have any lines. They'll traverse those areas. They'll have other animals that'll cross their paths. They'll cross into their territory and out without, without fear of reprisal, and so on and so forth. It just seems like we.
Nothing, there's nothing wrong with having love for your group, with your
Sure.
tribe, with your particular identity, your ethnicity. In fact, the reason for creating world governance is not to say we're all the same, it's to say celebrate the diversity, give us an umbrella that protects us so we can be as
Yeah.
different and as creative and so on as we want, but we're just not blowing each other up and killing and destroying the very life. Blood of the planet that we're living on. We can
Exactly.
be, and I love your beautiful planet behind you, because that's that really is the key. And if you look at the history and evolution of civilization, I mean, people realized that they could exist by communicate by creating partnerships, by creating cooperation. If you look at the history of the world, the cavemen didn't exist by, banging some woman over the head as they had in the cartoons and dragging her with a club, taking her with a club and dragging her by the hair. That's a total cartoon misnomer from this whole dominator society. The reality is that we evolved as a species because we could cooperate, we could communicate, and we could tell stories. But there's an interesting thing about telling stories. My cousin created a thing called the Endangered Stories Act. It's an act of the people, not of governments. And it says that if we don't pass on these sort of precious stories of our tribes, of our organizations, and so on, they can die and they're gone forever. We have to save them. But if you look at the word endangered, it includes the word and angered. The word and angered spells endangered. And we have to end the angered stories that are tearing us apart and tell the life-affirming stories that bring us together. Because some of these people are fighting because 2,000 years ago somebody did this to that and someone else did that to that. And so we're going to keep killing you because some people did that. And if we have to somehow find a way to let go, forgive, not because they deserve forgiveness, but because, hey, that anger is killing us. It's destroying
Absolutely.
us. The only
Absolutely.
way that
No.
we can
Yeah.
is
Yeah.
for us to end the anger stories and come together. It's like in that movie War Game, where the ultimate computer plays out all the nuclear scenarios in the Pentagon War Room. It's playing out all the nuclear scenarios, and every one of them ends up in total destruction. And then the game stops, and the big supercomputer says, "Huh, strange game. The only way to win the game is not to play." And
Yeah.
that's what it's really about. We have to not play that angered story. All these conflicts, wherever they are in the world, and whoever's right or wrong on them, they're all people who think they're right on their side. Each side thinks they're right. Each side thinks they're doing good. But because they're fighting these angered stories, they threaten our very existence. And the only way we can win is not to play that game.
This is true. A matter of fact, I know that there are those who, are taking sides, for example, in the most recent situation, and I'm taking a look at it, and I'm saying I'm not taking sides because both are wrong. They're both
Yeah.
guilty. It doesn't matter who started it. I'm sorry, we're not going to go there. It doesn't matter. The fact is that they both continue to play this deadly game, and it doesn't benefit anyone. It does not benefit anyone. And it doesn't matter the arguments over, well, this group wants to completely annihilate that group. And well, they both want to annihilate each other. And there's a part of me, Arthur, and please forgive me for putting it this way. I say, why don't, you know, I'm saying this, no offense to anybody. Why don't we just annihilate them both ourselves? We'll just get rid of both of them. And then we don't have to worry about it anymore. Well, you want to know something? That is no solution. Even I know that. That is not a solution. So, you know, I
Absolutely.
say that tongue in cheek, you
Yeah,
know?
people keep thinking if we can just kill the bad guys, we'll solve the problem.
Yeah.
And everybody's out there trying to kill bad guys. And the reality is that you know that killing bad guys doesn't solve things. Take a look at this. I mean, here we have, you know, we think there's such a thing as military power. That's an oxymoron. There is no such thing as military power. I mean, that you know, take Vietnam. First, the mighty French Empire, the Chinese Empire tried to dominate them for 1,000 years. They couldn't do it. The French tried to do it, you know, for decades and decades. They couldn't do it. The Americans came in with the most mighty, powerful military force in the world, and they're fighting these people in the jungle, and they couldn't beat them. Not because they weren't, you know, they were hand-tied or anything like that, because war doesn't work. Take a look at Afghanistan. The mighty Russian Empire tried to fight them. And then we spent 20 years bombing, killing them. This is supposed to give women human rights or something else. What did it do? It just pushed them into the hands of the most rabid, most anti-feminist, most destructive forces. When you kill people, you make more enemies and you get weaker. Killing people never. So killing bad guys. Never, do you know
Yeah.
anybody in the world who killed the bad guys and lived happily ever after? That's only a story. It's a false story that we tell and repeat over and over again because we think it's real. It's a myth. And the reality is that killing bad guys does not solve problems. What
Yeah.
does? It's finding a way to connect to each other, to communicate, to break through. And let me give you one very excellent example of a film that we have on public television
Nice.
stations right
Yes.
now. You mentioned that you mentioned it didn't matter who starred it. Well, we are getting on PBS stations a movie called Television Event, which is about the movie The Day After, and it looks at how did these courageous executives and how did Nicholas Meyer, the director, manage to get such an important film on TV, and how did it change the world? And it's incredible what it did. First of all, Nicholas made very sure that it didn't matter, didn't say who started it, the Russians started or we started it. It didn't matter who started it. We're both dead anyways. Why in the world do we want the movie to say who started it? So he fought the executives on that. They had brought in another writer who was trying to make it look like the Russians started it. He said, no way. He put his foot down again and again on this project. But what finally happened is when this movie did come out, 100 million Americans watched it, more than half the adult population, 200 million Russians, more than half of their adult population, and the entire world was so moved by this film that Ronald Reagan, who had been saying, calling the Russians an evil empire, and we have to fight and win a nuclear war, and he'd been egged on by some of his military advisors who were saying, yeah, we can fight and win this nuclear war. I interviewed one of them in my movie, The World Is My Country, who really thought you could fight and win a nuclear war, General Danny Graham. Anyway, what Reagan finally realized is that he had to go talk with the Russians, and he met with Gorbachev, and he said it's so much better talking that, and he ended up officiating with the Russians in the greatest reduction of our nuclear weapons, stepping us back from the brink of nuclear war, and actually creating a 70% reduction in our nuclear weapons. Now we're stirring all the pot up again. We're going to fight Russia. We're going to fight China. We're going to do more builds up and more arm builds up. And now we're heading right back on that crazy path toward extinction. So what this movie does is and the reason I like it is because not only does it help share the reality of the incredible danger we face of nuclear war. And people don't realize how we're actually worse off. The bullet atomic scientist says we're 90 seconds from midnight of destroying ourselves, both because of that and ecological reasons that and others we've got going. We've got a number of ways we're trying to do ourselves in AI, whatever else. And AI can be an incredible thing, but when we're programming our weapons to target to make the targeting choices, and even to do the nuclear war target, you know, planning and launching the war is now moving into the hands of AI. When we start doing that, oh my God, we are really like playing Russian roulette in a terrible way. But the key thing is that it showed the power of people. It showed that people who are courageous and willing to stand up, like Brandon Stoddard, the ABC executive, like Nicholas Meyer, the Star Trek director who directed The Day After, and all the wonderful people who joined in being extras and crew and part of this thing. We had a reunion of all these people in Kansas City, and when we launched The Day After, we had a grand reunion there, and all these people talked about how it had changed their lives and touched their lives, and people talked about ABC came and said, hey, we want to blow up your barn, and they pay them and all that. Anyway, it's a great story. It's a fun story of how it was created. It's uplifting. Hollywood Reporter, said it's witty and charming, and at the same time, it's powerfully disturbing, and at the same time, powerfully empowering, because it shows us you can change things, you can turn things around, and the key is getting out a new story. That's why I love your show. Tell me your story, and when we get to a new story, we can change things.
Well, I will tell you that I wanted when I was working back in Phoenix in the 80s, early 90s, I wanted a news story because I was bored out of my mind about the Antichrist, Armageddon, the end of the world, all of that stuff. And I've been hearing that, obviously, for the full 15 years. Although what was interesting was that story started to sort of dissipate a little bit as we got further into the 90s, because there was another... there was something else that was coming into vogue, so to speak, a little bit more of a positive, if you will, message from the pulpit. So I was glad to see that was happening. But the reality is that we need a new story. I mean, that's the long and the short of it, ladies and gentlemen. We need a new story, and it is just plain ridiculous that we're still telling this same story. And again, I'm not saying that that story should be shelved and we should cancel that culture, that kind of thing. I know that that's a big issue with a lot of people. We have to tell
and not close our eyes to the negative things. That's why I did like so much the movie television event, which is about the most impactful television event in the history of TV. And it's right now, it's on Los Angeles television on the 24th, tomorrow at 8 p.m. It's on the 25th as well. It's on, and in several other states. If you go to televisionevent.com, you'll see what cities it's on. And also, if you go to theworldismycountry.com/nuclear, you'll see how you can help us get it on many more stations. It's only on about 15 so far, but we need your help to get it out widely across the country, because it does help. It's so great because it both, and that's what I liked about Nicholas Meyer too. He both told the most devastating real story of what we face, the danger we face, but his Star Trek series, he's the director of two Star Trek movies, and he wrote the wonderful Star Trek about how in the future they had to go back and find a pair of mating whales and bring them into the future to save humanity, because we were going to die without the whales. He's written some of the most positive things, and that series Star Trek inspired so many young people and others to do great things in the world. It inspired people to become, you know, most of the NASA scientists and all were inspired by Star Trek. And so many inventions that happened because it was first visualized, first the story was told, first, and people imagined it. They imagineered it into existence, and then it happened. And so Nicholas, I love because he's got both properties. And that's what I also loved about Television Event. And what we do need now, though, is to begin to visualize and create a story of what we want for the future. In people's personal lives, so many people have realized that if they run around saying, oh, God, everything's awful, things are just going to get worse and worse. They're right. It's true. It'll happen. But people who say, oh, my God, I just am so enthusiastic because I can visualize all these great things that are going to happen. I just know things are going to come true and so on. And it happens more. I mean, there's whole books, there's whole people teaching you how to in courses so much on how to create from your mind. Because when you look at it, everything we have was created in our mind. You look at the computer you're on, the TV, the buildings. Somebody had to invent it in their head. They had to picture it. They had to create it, and then we acted on that vision and we created it. So as a society, if we're visualizing only doom and gloom, then that's what we're going to get. So we have to start telling stories where we visualize and movies and TV shows that take us into a world that works, that give us that positive vision of how we as a species can make it. And that's what we deal with on our podcast each week.
Now, this is going to be a strange question to you. And I think it's, again, I don't want to I don't want to bum anybody out, but why? Why should the human race continue? If this is something, because there are a lot of people who are trying to be optimistic, like myself. Who feel that, this could be a better place for all of us. But there are some who are basically they've kind of thrown up their hands and say, I'm not depressed over the way things are. I just figure, what's the point of continuing? I don't understand why, with all of the stuff that's going on in the world, and I know this was said when my parents were having children, and in the 70s and the 80s and so forth. Why would you want to bring a child into this world? That kind of thing. So that's the question I put to you, and let's just touch on that just briefly because I want to move on to some of these other areas as well. Why should the human
Sure.
race continue?
Let me answer that by telling you a story.
Okay.
When I was in growing up in Washington, D.C. and in high school, the Cuban Missile Crisis came along, and people were just terrorized that we were facing the end of the world. And in school, they were telling us to we're supposed to hide under our desks, duck and cover. And I said, no way. Have you seen the pictures of Hiroshima? Our whole school's not going to be here. And that was sent to the principal's office for that. It was sent for a number of things. But I remember having this deep primordial fear, oh my God, it's bad enough to just think about me or my family dying, but the whole human race, all art, all music, all the creations, all the beauty of the animals around us, all being incinerated. This was just so depressing that I began to find it immobilizing. And I began to meditate, and I began to and I lit a candle, and I began to realize that. I thought back to that song came into my head that we learned as in the Friends meeting in the Quaker religion, and it goes, "There's an ocean of darkness, and I drowned in the night till I came through the darkness to the ocean of light. And the light is forever, and the light sets us free. I will dwell in the glory of the light," said he. "Walk in the light wherever you may be. Walk in the light wherever you may be. In my old shaggy breeches and my shaggy, shaggy locks, I am walking in the glory of the light," said Fox. Now, Fox was the founder of the Quakers, and what he said is that it's actually it was called the Society of Friends. That was the name that they chose for it. They were called Quakers by other people who saw that when they trembled with this feeling that moved into them in the silence that they might tremble, so they called them Quakers. But and then they took that on. But they're really it's a Society of Friends. And what he said is, we don't need, churches and steeples and popes and all those people telling us what to think. There's an inner light in each of us. We're a spirit. We can tune into that inner light, and we can connect directly with the spirit, with the source. And so in that light, I began to realize when I thought of that, that Yes, there is this ocean of darkness, and I can literally drown in it. The more I study it, I find if you thought that was bad, it's even worse than that. And if you thought that was bad, folks, it's 10 times worse than that. And even that, if you do it, it's even worse. And then you can just get drowning in that darkness. And at the same time, you can look around and you can say, wow, look at this. It's a beautiful sunny day. There's such an incredible nature. There's humanity is sending space probes out and taking pictures of the depths of the universe and all the amazing wonders of it. People are making incredible, people are all around the world are helping each other in social groups and in Rotaries and Lions Clubs and all. They're all helping people, others from around the world. There's so much good that people are doing. They're helping each other, others' families. They're loving, they're caring, they're telling stories about love. They're learning how to get along better and telling that in their stories. There's look at the microscopic level, amazing inventions being made and amazing positive and people starting to learn to love and reconnect with nature and learning so much. I mean, there's just a literal ocean of light all around us. It's just an incredible, endless ocean. And the more you look at it, the more amazing it is. You take every leaf and study it, and there's amazing, what an amazing intricate. You know what an amazing, fascinating creature humans are on this planet, and I realize that both are simultaneously true. There is an ocean of darkness and there's an ocean of light. If we choose to dwell in that ocean of light, we get depressed, we go down, we're visualizing things down. We really don't have much hope because we're letting ourselves drown in that. But if we can choose, make a conscious choice to live in that ocean of light, we have much more chance of survival. We have much more chance we'll get out of it. So I decided to dedicate my life to telling stories that create this positive vision of the future we want. That's why we have the Gary Davis story. That's why on our weekly podcast called the People Powered Planet Podcast, because that's what Gary talked about, is creating a people powered planet, a synergistic people powered planet. We have incredible speakers each week talking about solutions, solutionaries, not people dwelling on all the problems, but on the solution. And we recently had, you can see her on our website, Suzanne Taylor, who ran a contest for putting yourself in 2050, where the humanity's made it and things are working, and then telling your story. How did we get from there to there? And the story had to have, you had to be personally playing a role with it. And so people had to put their minds and thoughts and concentration on, well, how did I create this future that worked? How did I help feed into that? And people had some amazing essays. You'll be able to see them on our website. We have a link to that. If you go to peoplepoweredplanet.com, it'll take you right over to our World is My Country Club meetings, where every Wednesday at 10, we meet with solutionaries, and you'll see all the links to Suzanne's wonderful contest, and you can still submit essays to her of your vision for how we can create a world that works. And it's amazing, our thoughts create reality. So if we choose to draw on that ocean of light, we have the power to do it, folks. We literally have the power to develop a world that works.
Absolutely. We encourage you to go to those websites that have been mentioned here on the program that Arthur has talked about as well. And of course, there is also the website, theworldismycountry.com. And by the way, that film too should be seen by everybody. I'm curious, and in reference to that film, as we continue moving on here on Tell Me Your Story, how did you or whoever was in charge of it, how did you get Martin Sheen involved in this?
Well, I worked for about a year trying to get to him. I of course went to his agents and managers, and they all just ignored me completely. I finally got a connection and contact to his personal representative, and she said, "Okay, I'll take it to him." And she said, "No, he's not interested." And then finally, we got someone who knew his wife to show her the movie, and she showed it to him. And he calls me up, oh, about 11:30 at night or something, and said, "Arthur, I saw your movie. What can I do for you?" And he was, and so he agreed to do the intro, and we talked about what should be on it and so on. And then I said, "Okay, should I run that Should I send the draft of what we've been talking about to your agent or to your personal representative? He said, oh, never send anything to them. They never give me anything important. He said, just fax it right to me in a fax machine at that time. And we just faxed it to him and then we communicated directly. You know, anybody who is in the movie industry and so on is so deluged with people trying to contact them that they have to protect themselves by having teams of people around them whose job is to say no. And so part of it is visualizing, creating, finding the right connections, and just being in that positive spirit where the right connections happen and the right things happen so that we could get Martin to be the introduction. So The World Is My Country is presented by Martin Sheen, and you can watch it by going to theworldismycountry.com. It does show where the link is, and you can see this amazing story of world citizen number one. And now Martin wants us to make it into a series. If you go to theworldismycountry.com and put a little forward slash in the word series, you'll see his wonderful interview where he said, yes, this book, My Country is the World, is an incredible book. It would make a great series week after week to tell his amazing adventures of this guy who actually lived in one world. I mean, we all live in these countries called borders. He stepped beyond them. He gave up national citizenship. And he traveled all over the world on his world passport. And he was thrown in, 43 jails, mostly before he created the world passport, because first he was trying to travel with no papers. Like, why do we need papers? It's one world. But he finally decided you have to play their paper game. So he created the world passport. And it's been incredible. He has a whole office in Washington, D.C., which helps people in need right now. Just today and yesterday, we were working on saving someone's life who, these documents have saved so many people, because often they're stuck in refugee camps or places where they can't travel. Sometimes they just need some way to have an ID. Sometimes they can't even get medical care without an ID because they don't have a nationality. And so if they can get the world passport, they can be able to get into a hospital, get the kids into education, or open a bank account. I mean, these world IDs have been a lifesaver for so many people. And again, if you go to our website, theworldismycountry.com, right at the top, there's a tab where you click on world passport, and you'll find out how you can get your world passport, or is an online application right there, or more about the other world identity documents.
I know that's something that I've been telling people when we have you on. I'm going to get mine. I actually I have only renewed my U.S. passport, but I do definitely want to go to your website to that website to get the world passport. And I know,
and keep your national passport. I mean, what I do is I present my national passport first, so they can't, because sometimes if you don't, they'll throw you on the ground or torture or do whatever else. They can do anything they want. It's arbitrary. But then I say, I'm also, in addition to being a national citizen, I'm a world citizen. So will you also stamp my world passport? Mm-hmm. And it's amazing the kind of reaction. Some say, no, we don't accept that. Some say, where can I get one of these? Some are glad to stamp it. In this film that I created, I'm the director, but the producer is Melanie Bennett, an amazing collaborator who works with me on all these things. And she was crossing into Los Angeles, and she presented her world passport. And the woman took a look at it and she said, oh, is this the passport we're not supposed to stamp? And she stamped it. It was her own act of world citizenship. She was freeing herself from the bounds of her orders and stamping it and being a world citizen. You know, that's what it's about. It's about us taking responsibility, not being locked in these boxes called nation states, but freeing our minds from those boundaries. So here was this courageous woman right there in the passport office, who was freeing herself from being an automaton of the system and just declared her world citizenship by stamping the passport. So, it's a story. Basically, each of these stories are stories of courage. They're stories of love. They're people who love the world so much they're willing to stand up in this way. And they are the people who make changes. So we can all do it, folks.
Yeah, it is not impossible. I mean, you know, when you start thinking about let's just say, for the sake of argument, let me start thinking about the founding of this country and what opportunities were generated through the documents that we're supposedly living under, and the phrase, this being the land of opportunity and all of that, and you'd think, oh, that's not possible. We have too many dictators around the world. We have too many people who want to run the show. Well, guess what? All right, maybe in the beginning, what a great idea. Let's do this. Let's make this happen. And yeah, okay, maybe we've gone awry a little bit, but that doesn't mean that we can't bring it back to center again where it belongs. But at the same time, if you're looking for a better world, if you want to make it a better world, it is possible. I mean, think about many of the innovations that have come about over the centuries, especially in the last century and a half. I mean, it's absolutely incredible. It amazes me when I hear the phrase or the sentence, "Your phone that you carry in your pocket is more powerful than all of the computers that landed us on the moon." I mean, that is truly an astounding event. And if that is something that can happen, then the world is, so to speak, if you will, the world is our oyster. Sky's the limit. So it's
Well, I
not
thought, yeah,
impossible.
when I was in school, I thought about, I mean, I love physics and I thought about that, but I decided we don't need more inventions in the world of physics. We've got incredible ones. What we need is inventions in the world of how we interact as a species. How we, the whole point of evolution was that our intelligence is supposed to give us a way to survive as a species. Well, let's put our intelligence to that. Let's apply it to system change. All these wars and all things that happen because of story, dysfunctional stories and dysfunctional systems that grow out of the dysfunctional stories. And if we can create the new stories and create more functional systems, the exact same people who are killing each other under one system would cooperate and work together on another. And I think that the key is to step above and beyond the nations that divide us. I don't think you can fix it from inside the nation state system, because the very nation state system is all about we versus them, us versus, we exist because we fight to protect you from these others. And until we have that, create that integrative system for running Spaceship Earth, I mean, can you imagine, trying to run any complex system with, 189 or so separate operating systems all going in different directions? If you did that in your computer, no wonder it would crash and burn. If you did that in a car, the car would go nowhere. You've got to have some way of creating a coherent operating system for Spaceship Earth. I mean, we are all on this spaceship traveling through the planet. And once we just make that small shift from thinking of ourselves as national citizens to world citizens, suddenly the problems that seemed insurmountable and unbeatable become eminently solvable. Yes, of course we can solve these things. We couldn't solve them when it was the we versus them, but humanity already has solutions to every ecological problem, every energy alternative problem. I mean, there's an explosion of great inventions of how to solve these problems, and people actually finding that they can do biomimicry and get closer to nature. And nature has solutions to all these problems, that we need to tune into. But we find the solutions are there if we can shift our thinking to that. If we can make that shift and then begin to create the systems that implement that. If we the people create government, then let's just do it, folks. Let's create a totally different kind of government that doesn't enforce with guns and bombs, which are weak force. They don't do anything. That enforces through the real force, which is the power of the people. I mean, not nonviolent power. Look at this. The mighty Soviet army tried to, well, invaded with all its tanks, just like they're doing in Ukraine now. Invaded Lithuania and the Estonia and the Baltic nation, and they reacted with a singing revolution. They all held hands and sang songs of freedom. I went to Lithuania, which is where my grandfather was born, and the tour guide said, "Yeah, I was on top of this building, telling people the tanks are coming down, Main Street or something." And then everybody would run toward the tanks and block them. They don't run away from them. And they finally gave up. They about 14 Lithuanians were killed. They mourned them, but they managed to beat the mighty Russian army with a nonviolent nonviolent force. They couldn't do it. And Ukraine, there was a lot of people starting to do some nonviolent resistance to them. All through Eastern Europe, there were these mighty nonviolent movements that beat the Russian Empire. But what happened is, because that didn't fit our story, the old story is, it was all from the melodrama, there's the maiden going about her normal life, the terrible villain comes along, and he's just intractable, he won't listen to reason. The hero comes along, beats the bad guy with superior violence, and rides off into the sunset with the girl. And it doesn't matter whether the bad guy is Russia, or the good guy is the people of Ukraine, or whoever it is. It's the same story that gets played over and over again. So when some major things happen, major empires, fail to do things, people don't even see that, hey, look, nonviolence worked, because it doesn't fit the story. We need to be a story that allows us to see the reality that nonviolence is far more powerful than violence. That violence doesn't work. Mighty empires can put the most powerful military force into play and kill millions of people, and it doesn't win. They don't win anything. The only way to win is actually to find that way, to find that humanity in us and connect as humans, and to operate out of that love force, which has incredible power to help make shifts and changes in our world.
Yeah, I'm myself flabbergasted at the perspectives of the quote unquote powers that be, who continue to perpetuate the same solution to the problem. And you sit here and I sit here and I go, you've learned absolutely nothing. I don't care how long you've been there, a year or 50 years, which is also frustrating as all get out, that some of these people have been there totally contrary to the founding fathers' intention. You're a servant. This is not a job. You are a servant to the people, and you aren't supposed to make it a career. That's the first part. But then, of course, the second part is, have you not seen the history of doing this over and over and over again? It's never solved the problem, because it just crops up again. For example, when, and this was, you talk about the old story, when they say that the Cold War ended, it was not long after that that our government decided we can't go without an enemy. So they created one out of, at that time, out of the Muslim nation, out of the Islamic world. They turned them into our enemy. They weren't before, but
I think you're right. I think the military industrial complex was desperate for an enemy. Our economy was in great trouble. And we tried a couple of, Panama or Grenada, but they yeah. weren't enough to like sustain a big military industrial complex, and all the jobs and all the people all the boost to the economy. It's a terrible way to boost the economy, because it doesn't regenerate. It doesn't, your bombs can't then be used to plow fields or to build things or to create things. So, but still, it's a temporary shot to the economy. And it's one that they were dependent on. It's like an addict who's dependent on the drug, even though it's not really helping his life or solving it, but he wants to hold on to it. And so we continue to use that. And the reality is that we have much greater power if we can create something new. And that's the genius of humanity, that we're creative species, that we can imagine and create much better worlds and futures.
Yeah. Arthur, how long have you been involved in this? I don't want to say crusade. In this revolution, how about we say revolution?
Well, this revolution.
Yeah, I like it.
Well, since I was 3 years old, when I was 3 years old, I told my dad that, "Dad, why don't they take all the guns and melt them down and turn them into doorknobs?" And ever since I've been trying to find ways to open the door to peace. My dad and my mom were very active in the civil rights movement. They actually met at a meeting of the Fellowship of Reconciliation to integrate a lunch counter in Washington, D.C. And so I was raised with some very positive inputs and some inspiring parents. And I've been on a lifelong quest, really, to to help us not just pray for peace or think about peace or want to have peace, but to actually really create the stories that will end up actually creating that peaceful future we want.
Well, this is a fascinating conversation. We always have them here on this program, and especially with you, Arthur, because obviously, if we destroy the planet, we've got no place to go. We have no. I mean, I applaud the explorers who want to go out into space, to the moon, to Mars. I applaud them on their exploratory mindset, and they're wanting to go on these ventures, if you will, to look for. Sometimes they even say to look for a new place for us to move to. The problem is that unless we fix us first, we just take the problem with us, and that's something that has to be fixed before we can start to move away from the planet. There is no planet B. This is it.
You're absolutely right. This is it, folks. And that's why our job as solutionaries is so crucial. And that's why we're going to do it, folks, because
what else is on the table in terms of the world is my country and this whole evolution, revolution, and so forth in terms of making this a better place for everybody. And it's not that it's a bad place. Don't get me wrong, folks. And I've said it before. There's always room for improvement. And that's all we're talking about is a little some improvement. That's all.
Well, a new issue of World Citizen News just came out. If you sign up at peoplepoweredplanet.com, our club website, you can sign up free for starters. If you want to support us, that's even better. But you can get our bulletins about all the wonderful weekly meetings we have to begin to create and build a better future. And also, you'll see that World Citizen News because the anniversary of Gary Davis's World Citizen Action Day is coming right up. This is something where there's an incredible number of people working, Citizens for Global Solutions, and then there's ICANN that got the Nobel Prize for helping get the Treaty for the Prohibition of Nuclear Weapons started, it is now, nuclear weapons are already outlawed in international law. It's enough nations have signed it that they are illegal, but it's not enforced in the nations that actually have them, but there are ways that people are finding to enforce it, and that is that the treaty prohibits even any way of aiding or abetting the manufacture or the storage or anything to do with nuclear weapon. So now some banks and others are discovering that if they want to do business in countries like Mexico that have signed the treaty and are willing to enforce it, they have to comply and get out of the, some have already gotten out of the nuclear weapons business because this is more important. The peace business is much better than the war business.
Well, I would agree with you there. As a matter of fact, I seem to recall there was a woman who I met for the first time back in 2007. She was on this program in one of the early programs editions, I should say, of this program, Barbara Marks Hubbard.
Yes, I remember Barbara very well.
Yeah. And she actually ran for public office. And a matter of fact, I believe she was on the ticket I don't remember the year that she mentioned, but she ran on a ticket and she was like the vice presidential candidate and talked about instituting the Department of Peace. You have a Department of War, let's have a Department of Peace. I seem to recall.
I worked with Barbara to evolve a story really about how we could evolve, an orbiting peace room that was monitoring the challenges of the planet and helping empower people who were trying to overcome whatever the challenges were, a whole kind of sci-fi story, but not a story of war and destruction, but a story about how we're coming together as peacekeepers around the planet and using all this incredible technology and also learning how to align with nature where we can create a participatory partnership, regenerative beautiful future for humanity. And so she worked with us on that vision. And we hope someday to have enough. Well, we know one of these days we'll have enough funds to help bring that vision to the big screen and be able to let people week after week dwell in that future of our dreams so that we can manifest it. So anyone wants to join us in that, come to peoplepoweredplanet.com or theworldismycountry.com. Either one will take you
Absolutely.
there.
One other thing she said too, which sort of goes to the heart of what we've been going through for the last, let's just say, 20 years in particular, since we're in the 21st century. And she said that the transition to a new paradigm is like giving birth, and there are the birth pangs. And she never said how long they were going to last.
Yeah, they've been a little long, folks.
A little long,
That's
yeah. I tell you what, I can't. I mean, and again, you and I, we have no points of reference here, but we've heard of women being in labor for hours, sometimes days. You know how in the Bible it says, you know, an hour is a year and a year is whatever and so forth. And so I'm just wondering, you know, what the time frame is. But that's what she said was that, you know, we're going to go
right.
through things. But when we get out the other side, it's going to be a beautiful thing. So that's the optimism that I carry with me.
And you know, I'll tell you one reason why it's better to be an optimist than a pessimist. Because if you're an optimist, we have more chance of creating what we visualize. And if we're wrong, well, there'd be no one left to say, I told you so. So what have we
Sure.
lost by being an optimist? And we've lived our lives better while we're here. I mean, if you live in dread of worrying what's going to happen, then you're living in that pain twice. I mean, here I am right now. I'm right here by the beach in this beautiful location. There's all these things to enjoy. Now, if I spend all my time dwelling in, oh my God, a nuclear war is going to wipe all this out, it's going to destroy it, then I'm twice living that. Not just like, you know, not
Oh.
just if it would happen. I'm spending my whole life living in that fear and
Yeah.
living in that dread. Why not just live in that positive, beautiful future? It's much less likely to happen if we do that. And if it does happen, we haven't lost anything and we've lived our lives more fully anyway. So there's really no downside to living as a optimist as long as you don't close your eyes
Right.
to the realities we have to deal with, which is why I like the film The Day After and all these films, The World Is My Country, because they did show, the World Is My Country starts off with the horror of the war that Gary experienced, but it takes us into that positive future. So we need to just not be Pollyannas totally in the cloud. We need to recognize that reality, but we need to see that this is part of a progression into succeeding and making it. You know, if you think of your life as a story, if you think of your life as a story, as a movie, you know, if you say you went out to a movie and just everything was hunky dory and there were no problems or anything, you said, "Where I want my money back. Where was the movie?" You know, but first, you know, there's this whole hero's journey thing. You know, first you're going about your ordinary life, and then there's an inciting incident, something really terrible happened, and then you have to persevere and overcome that, and you have to gain allies, and you finally see doing that, but then you crash back down. It goes into your depth of the pain, and you finally, you know, come up to a new resolution, even higher. And then if the story takes us through that journey and we travel that journey, then at the end we say, wow, that was a good story. You know, we took that journey together. And we have to realize that that's what our lives are like. If it's in the bad part of the journey, let's go, it's not the end. You know, it all works out in the end. And if it hasn't worked out, it's not the end yet, folks. So let's be on that trajectory to building that world we choose. There's no downside, and the only upside is that we get to live life, love the people around us, interact with great people, with nature, and we get to build a real strong likelihood that we will make it, folks. It's not
Yes.
assured. I mean, we are in a shaky period, but we can do it. You know, that's what always makes the movie even more heroic, when the odds seem so tough and boy, how are they ever going to make it? And they do, and yay, they made it, folks. Well, that's us. That's us here on planet Earth. Yay, we made it, folks. We've got a world that works.
Yeah. Well, I applaud you and everybody who is involved in this process. It is just it's one of those things where the life that we live is important. My life has meaning. Now, I've never been one to believe that my life doesn't have meaning, and I've often said this, that if it didn't have meaning, if I didn't think it did, then I'd walk off of this interview. I'd go out and rape and pillage and plunder, because life, it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter. It also reinforces for me, because I have that sense that my life has meaning, that I will live my life with that meaning, knowing that there is an afterlife. Because if my life has meaning, it makes no sense for me personally, and I own this is just for me, folks. It makes no sense for me to believe that when my life is over, there's nothing. The lights out. Now, there's two sides to that. Number one is, if it is lights out, I'll never know. It won't matter, because I won't know. Lights out. However, I'd rather live the other way, knowing that there's more after this existence. What that is, I don't know. There are things that I do believe, but hey, we all believe stuff, and so there you go. Arthur, I want to thank you so much for joining us here on the program. This has been a wonderful, and I want to give you last words here on the program. If there's anything more that you'd like to add before we wrap this up, and again, I thank you so much for the time.
I just want to thank you. I want to thank some of the wonderful people there in Santa Barbara with you, including Barbara Mueller, who I think first introduced me to you, to my associate, to my producer, Melanie Bennett, and just all the wonderful people who are part of this journey together as we progress toward the world that works for everyone. Thank you.
Absolutely. Well, again, I thank you, and folks, go to the peoplepoweredplanet.com, peoplepoweredplanet.com, or theworldismycountry.com. Again, theworldismycountry.com. Do what you can in your corner of the world. I feel the same way when it comes to cleaning up the planet. I can't clean up the planet, but I can clean up my space. And I don't sit here going, well, but my neighbor's not doing anything. So what? So what if my neighbor's not doing anything? It's still up to me. I got to start, and maybe my neighbor will pick up the example. Maybe not, but I'd rather do it than not, because I'd like a clean place to live. I thank you all for listening to and watching Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World, where we're giving you choices and knowledge of those choices to help make your dreams come true. And until our next broadcast, podcast, video cast, love to Lal. Jeanette, I am still listening. Dad, continue to be happy, because I am. Smokey, I'll see you on the other side. And to my dear friend Zorro, aho, aho.